I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. Now, we are in the midst of a special edition. This special edition is entitled Big Picture Thinking. And this is special edition, I believe it's number 5. That's my check on it just before we record is that it is, in fact, number 5. So I guess we're going to go with that. Sometimes I get ahead of myself here. So why are we doing this? As we have explained in each one of these special editions, why are we doing this? Well, I mean, the short answer is we're doing it because we really need to do it, and it is important in the giant scheme of things. What is the giant scheme of things? The giant scheme of things is that we are, as members of a modern industrial society, and as either directly or indirectly associated somehow with the modern systems that we build, that we produce, that we manufacture, the systems that we build, the infrastructure that we create, and so forth, is in fact creating hopefully a better world for all of us, but that also comes with a price, and the price is that we better be aware of what we are actually creating in terms of its ability to function and its capabilities, and also its ease of use, or can humans use it effectively, and is it user-friendly is a particular term. Now, I'm not anti-progress by any stretch of the imagination. I applaud progress in my field. My professional life I spent in the field of aviation, and we had enormous progress in area that was essentially about 100 years old. It was created about 100 years ago, this whole area of aviation, and it has progressed amazingly since. And so I am a firm believer in human progress and making ourselves a better place, making this a better place to live, making it easier for us to get around, to communicate, to trade, and so forth and so on. So all of that is good. But there is a certain amount of responsibility, too. We have to be able to build something that is that will last. We have to be able to build something that can function reasonably well, and that can basically achieve the things that we want it to achieve. Okay, so big picture thinking. Big picture thinking embraces all of the other thinking arenas or thinking modalities that would include, but not limited to, I don't have the full list in front of me, but that would include such things as critical thinking, systems thinking, strategic thinking, design thinking, innovation thinking, and stuff like that. And the reason why big picture thinking embraces all of these is because all of these have certain elements of big picture characteristics. All of these encourage us to consider things as a complete unit, or consider things as a whole system, or consider things as a complete system, or consider things that that contain multiple interacting variables, and consider these things as part of a whole, and look at things holistically so that we can understand how the whole thing actually operates and what is the behavioral characteristics of the whole thing. So it's not a piecemeal approach, or another term I've seen used is piecewise approach. It's not a piecemeal approach to understanding things, but it's looking at things at a complete level, or a whole level, or a systems level. But big picture thinking also involves not just looking at the particular operating system or the operating unit, but it also looks at things that involve what is the environment in which we find ourselves in. So the environmental factors, or the environment, or the operating envelope, that's particularly important. Not also, of course, the system that we're using, or we're using some kind of a device or mechanism to help us in our mission activities. And so we are employing some kind of a system. And also, often these systems are very complex in and of themselves. And then, of course, last but not least, is, are we actually performing a complex operation? And if the answer to all of those three is yes, in other words, do we understand the environment in which we are operating in, and do we recognize that that additional attention needs to be paid if the environment is less than benign, or if the environment contains adverse conditions? It's another way of saying that. If the environment could or does contain adverse conditions, and if we are employing a system that contains more than three functional areas that interact with one another. In other words, it is not a simple system, but it is a complex system. And so three is a key number. If we have three or more functions that are performing certain things and, in fact, interacting with one another, we have, by definition, a complex system, or we are operating a complex mechanism. Okay? And then, last but not least, is the operation that we are performing simple, or is it complex? In other words, are there three or more things going on simultaneously? If there are three or four things going on simultaneously, then it is by definition complex. And so we could have all three representing certain aspects of complexity. And so if we have all three, then we have what we call compound complexity. And we are dealing with situations that are very difficult to deal with if we are not properly trained to do so. Okay, so that's the key. And that's one of the reasons why we're here talking about it, is that we want people to be formally trained. Somehow, somewhere, in some capacity, we would like all of us that are or will encounter things that are complex, particularly complex problems, we would like the performers to be able to perform well, or to perform at an optimum level. All right, so big picture thinking. Okay, now we have also been creating this scenario where we are a member of a team, a tiger team. We're members of a tiger team that have been brought together to consider things that ought to be done looking forward in the future based upon what has recently occurred in this particular industry. The industry could be any one of the industries out there. There are, the nuclear power industry, the petroleum industry has had some problems with oil platforms not performing well. In fact, some of them reaching levels of catastrophe. And that's a big, huge problem. There's difficulties with the automobile industry. There are efforts at urban air mobility that come with it, a whole host of complex issues that have to be solved. There's autonomous vehicles, and you name it. There are a number of military initiatives going on right now that are extremely complex. There are space vehicle considerations, space operations, and what have you that are ongoing as we speak. There are efforts underway to explore the moon and to explore, to engage in human exploration of Mars. And the list goes on and on and on. And so that's all good. But are we prepared to deal with these things in a meaningful way? And so that's the whole idea behind it. So we are part of this Tiger team. We've been brought together to consider things that we ought to be doing looking forward. All right. So this Tiger team, we are members of a supplier to a aircraft manufacturer. So we are part of the supply chain. And we're a serious supplier, and so we supply mechanisms and devices and subsystems to a major manufacturer. And as such, we have a stake in this situation in which we can hopefully find solutions to some of these mission-critical problems. Okay, so that's what... Now... As part of the team, we have decided to do a couple of things. Number one is that we're not going to jump right into the fray immediately. We're going to spend some quality time considering how we should go about thinking about what has occurred, and how should we go about thinking about the best way for us to identify areas of opportunity and the best way for us to identify solutions to some of the most serious problems that have been uncovered recently through analysis and studies of the catastrophe that has befallen this particular industry. And the industry is the aviation industry, and we are part of a major aviation supplier. Okay, there are three things we talked about last time, and we're going to review them briefly. There are five areas that need to be addressed. Number one, the first area was that in the process of creating the design specifications for this new aircraft series, sub-series actually, some of the assumptions that were made were actually wrong, okay? They're also in the process of creating a design for some of the systems and subsystems. Some of the designs, the overall design exhibited certain shortcomings. Number three, there were critical needs with respect to operating this particular system that were unmet. So we have wrong, shortcomings, and unmet are the key words. Also, the multifunctional failures or the failure cascade is another way of saying that were, in fact, not adequately considered. So inadequate considerations to multiple and cascading failures, which actually will occur. It's not all that unusual. And last but not least, the design team did not model certain performance behaviors that would have led them to reconsider the overall design approach that was being taken. Okay, so that's what we're up against. So as a Tiger team, we have decided we are not going to jump right into the fray because we're not sure exactly what the fundamentals are concerning the problem space. We haven't even identified, or another way of saying that is that we have not even adequately identified the problem space. And in the lingo that I like to use, we have not clarified the problem space. We have not achieved problem space awareness. So what exactly is the problem for which we are seeking a solution? Okay. Now, what led up to this is a problem that was uncovered during the preliminary design stage of this aircraft. And this has been brought out by the National Transportation Safety Board's analysis of the company in this situation, this catastrophic situation that it has occurred. And they say the following, that during the preliminary design stage, it was revealed that a flight dynamic problem existed with the aircraft, in that a aircraft nose up pitch moment was in fact produced without flight crew control or input, and it was produced when the aircraft was operating at high angle of attack, which basically means that we have a aerodynamic or a flight dynamic problem. The aircraft is not supposed to do this. The aircraft is supposed to be pitch stable, not pitch unstable. And so there was a regime of flight that could be encountered in this case, in which the aircraft would exhibit unstable flying characteristics. So the problem here was huge. This was a huge problem. It was apparently it was unexpected. Okay, so the bottom line here is that the organization that was put together struggled with this problem. They tried to come up with a solution, in a short-term solution. They struggled with it mightily, and I'm sure that they had some, they were burning the midnight oil for a very long period of time. And, you know, I don't mean to, you know, to criticize or single out any people here. I'm really, that's not the purpose of what we're trying to do. It's not the purpose of the show. I will point out that the, you know, this is not the only industry that has had problems, all right? So serious problems that have resulted in catastrophe. And so I guess we need to learn, you know, continuous improvement, learn what's going on, learn how we can perhaps do a better job. So that was the whole idea, all right? So as a Tiger team, we've identified what was the triggering event, what caused this thing. And the fact that the design was not up to the task of the problem, that actually didn't solve the problem, it exacerbated the problem. And so we need to know something fundamentally first. We need to begin to understand how individuals, groups, teams, how did they come to this conclusion, and how can we improve the way we think about these situations, the way we think about dealing with these issues, and how can we incorporate big picture thinking that doesn't look at these things from a narrow linear standpoint, but looks at all of this stuff from a big picture standpoint. How can we do that? And so we'll spend some quality time on that, hopefully during this session. And I'm going to be pulling up a couple of audios here because, the reason why I'm playing this, these audios, and a number of them, by the way, I'm not sure I mentioned this before, but a number of them comes from a YouTube channel called Systems Innovation, a particularly good discussion of some of the things that we are covering here. I wanted to get different voices to come in because I don't want to be the only one that's proposing things that we ought to be learning about complexity theory, and we ought to be learning about systems theory, and we ought to be learning about systems thinking, and we ought to be learning about critical thinking, and we ought to be learning about design thinking, and we ought to be learning about big picture thinking. I don't want to appear to be the only person talking about this stuff, and in fact, I'm not. There are a lot of people that are talking about this, increasingly so, because it does appear that a lot of this stuff is catching on. We are finally recognizing, and I think maybe this aviation catastrophe was a tipping point. I kind of think it was. I kind of think a lot of people are really thinking long and hard about how we go about doing business and how can we learn from these disastrous mistakes and not do it again. How can we put things in place? And, you know, we can do it all kinds of ways. We can do the quick and dirty, the slap on the back, or we can do the quick and dirty, put in some kind of procedure. But are those just Band-Aids? You know, my feeling is that a lot of what people would often recommend in the short term are just Band-Aids. They're not getting to the fundamental issues that need to be addressed. All right, so complexity. We are going to talk about a couple of things. What is a complex system? Here we're dealing with complex things, I may have played this before. I don't remember exactly, but it bears worth repeating. If I did, it is important that all of us understand exactly what we're dealing with. You know, if we are dealing with a complex environment, if we are dealing with a complex system, if we're trying to perform a complex operation, and then we are dealing with multiple levels of complexity. And so we actually ought to understand some aspects of it that are fundamental and that are germane to everything that is complex. And so I guess I'm really sort of like saying that that one of the keys to big picture thinking is to understand what it means to be dealing with things that are complex. And remember this, is the important aspect of complex things or complexity theory. You can not understand a complex system just looking at its components. It cannot be done. You cannot do that. You can only understand a complex system looking at it at the systems level or the holistic level, because it exhibits something that is, well, it exhibits lots of things, novel behavior and all kinds of strange things, unusual behavior, unexpected behavior. A lot of this stuff is called emergence, emergent properties. It is also called non-intrinsic global attributes. And so it will exhibit global attributes or attributes that are manifesting themselves at the systems level or at the global level that have no location at the component level, cannot be located in any of the system components. And so this is a really fascinating aspect of complexity. It's an important thing that we need to consider. And so we're going to spend some quality time on this, as well as a couple of other audio clips. And here we go with the first one.
In this module, we will be trying to define what exactly a complex system is. Before we start, we should note that there is no formal definition for what a complex system is, and thus there remains many different perspectives and opinions on the subject. What we present here is just a working definition. Firstly, a complex system is a special class of system. A system is simply a set of parts called elements, and a set of connections between these parts called relations. These parts can be ordered or unordered. An unordered system is simply a set of things. Because there is no specific structure or order, we can describe a set simply by listing all of its elements and their properties. So a pile of stones on the ground is an example of an unordered set. As there is no pattern or order to the system, we can only describe it by describing the properties of each element in isolation and then adding them all up, with the whole set being nothing more than the sum of its individual parts. If, in contrast, through the relations, these parts are ordered in a specific way, then they can function together as an entirety, and out of these parts working together, we get the emergence of a global pattern of organization that is capable of functioning as a coherent whole. For example, if all the parts in our car are arranged in a specific way, then we will have the global functionality of a vehicle of transportation, or out of the specific arrangement of billions of cells and the different specialized organs that make up our body, we get the emergence of a global system that enables us to operate as an entire organism. So that is the basic model of a system. It consists of elements and relations. When those elements work together, we get the emergence of a new level of organization. Now, let's start adding complexity to this. Probably the only property that will be in all definitions of a complex system is that they consist of many parts. Many parts that are distributed out without centralized control. Organization is formed out of the local interactions between the parts through a process of self-organization that gives rise to the emergence of new levels of organization. With the phenomenon of emergence that we were previously discussing, a whole new level to the system has developed, which then starts to interact with other systems in its environment, the result being that new patterns of organization develop, and once again we get the emergence of another level of organization, and so on. People form part of social groups that form part of broader society, which in turn forms part of humanity. The point to take away here is that these systems have a hierarchical structure. This is a pervasive phenomenon in our world. Elements are nested inside of subsystems, which in turn form part of larger systems, and so on. All complex systems have this multidimensional property to them. They are composed of many elements on many different scales, with all of these levels affecting each other. A business is part of a local economy, which is part of a national economy, which in turn is part of a global economy. Each is interconnected and interdependent with the others. We cannot fully isolate one component or reduce the whole thing to one level, and this is a primary source of complexity. So this is our first property to a complex system. Many different parts that are distributed out, with local interactions and self-organization, giving rise to new emergent levels on different scales. Next, interdependence and nonlinearity. The parts to a complex system are highly interdependent, and this interdependence creates nonlinearity. Almost all well-formulated definitions for complex systems involve the term nonlinearity. It is a continuously recurring and pervasive theme. Nonlinearity arises from the fact that when we put two or more things together, the result may not necessarily be a simple addition of each element's properties in isolation. In contrary, we may get a combined effect that is greater or less than the simple sum of each part because of their interdependent nature. Examples of this might be two sound waves that are perfectly out of sync, canceling each other out through noise interference, or the division of labor as can be seen in many human and insect communities, resulting in synergies, which means the output will be far greater than what individuals could accomplish in isolation. Due to what are called feedback loops, nonlinear systems may grow or decay at an exponential rate. These periods of rapid change are defined as phase transitions. Thus, complex systems are known to be able to shift or flip into whole new regimes within very brief periods of time. Some small change in input value to the system can, through feedback loops, trigger a large systemic effect. This is called sensitivity to initial conditions, and it is the central idea within chaos theory. Examples of this butterfly effect can be seen in financial crises and the collapse of ecosystems such as coral reefs. Next, connectivity. Many definitions for complex systems involve dense or high levels of interconnectivity between components. As we turn up the degree of connectivity, it becomes the nature and structure of these connections that define the system as opposed to the properties of its components. How are things connected, and what is connected to what, become the main questions. At some critical level of connectivity, the system stops being a set of parts and becomes a network of connections, and it is now all about how things flow in this network. Networks are the true geometry of complex systems, and this connectivity reshapes our traditional three-dimensional Euclidean conception of space. In complex systems like the global air transportation system, or the financial system, or the internet, space is redefined in terms of topology created by connectivity. What matters is your position in the network structure and your degree of connectivity. Connectivity again leads us into the world of complexity, as the number of relations between elements can grow in an exponential fashion. If we take just a handful of elements, they can become connected in possibly thousands or even millions of different ways. Lastly, autonomy and adaptation. Whether we are talking about a flock of birds, the internet, or our global economy, there is no top-down centralized mechanism for coordinating the whole system. Within complex systems, elements have a degree of autonomy, often through their capacity to adapt to their local environment according to their own set of instructions. Without centralized coordination and with a degree of autonomy, elements can synchronize their states locally or cooperate, resulting in the emergence of patterns of organization from the bottom up. With autonomy and adaptation also comes the capacity for a variety of different responses for any given phenomenon, meaning complex systems are often heterogeneous, with high levels of diversity. Ecosystems and multicultural societies are good examples of this. Without centralized coordination, complex systems develop on the macro scale through a process of evolution. Elements within complex adaptive systems are subject to the evolutionary force of selection, where those that are best suited to that environment are selected and replicated, while others are not. Products are subjected to selection within a market environment. In democracies, politicians are subject to selection by voters, and creatures and ecosystems are subjected to natural selection through competition. In such a way, the whole macro-scale system manages to adapt to its environment without centralized coordination and develop to exhibit higher levels of both differentiation and integration. The greater the autonomy and capacity for adaptation that elements have, the more complex the system we are dealing with. In summary, we have been trying to lay down a basic working definition for a complex system while remembering that there is no formal consensus on the subject. We firstly talked about how a complex system is a special class of system. We defined a system as a set of elements and the relations between them. We saw how when these parts are arranged in a specific order for them to function as an entirety, we get what is called the process of emergence, whereby a new level of organization emerges. We then began to add complexity to our model of a system by defining it as a product of four primary parameters. Firstly, talking about the number of elements and different levels to the hierarchy within our system. We then discussed nonlinearity as another dimension to complexity, where non-additive interactions and feedback loops over time can give us exponential relations between the input and output to a system and lead to phase transitions. We also talked about connectivity as another driver of complexity, as heightened connectivity within complex systems means they often appear to us as networks. Lastly, we discussed how autonomy and adaptation enable self-organization and the process of evolution that shapes complex systems on the macro scale.
Okay, good discussion of complexity, complex things, complex systems, complexity theory, all of the above. We're going to continue because this is particularly important. And so we're going to continue with another audio clip. This is, this is about 10 minutes long also. But the reason why I'm doing this is because these discussions are particularly important now as we try to understand why this catastrophe happened. And my position is that it happened primarily or fundamentally because we did not understand that we were dealing with a complex environment, we were dealing with a complex system, and nonlinear behavior or nonlinear characteristics were in play. And so any design that did not address complexity and uncertainty, particularly nonlinearity, was going to fail. And that is my whole point. And so we'll continue this discussion. This is the second audio clip on complexity theory. I think it's really good. And so we'll turn it over to this rather interesting organization that has put this together, and let's learn together as we go through this.
In this video, we will be giving an overview to the area of complexity theory by looking at the major theoretical frameworks that are considered to form part of it and contribute to the study of complex systems. Complexity theory is a set of theoretical frameworks used for modeling and analyzing complex systems within a variety of domains. Complexity has proven to be a fundamental feature of our universe that is not amenable to our traditional methods of modern science. And thus, as researchers have encountered it within many different areas from computer science to ecology to engineering, they have had to develop new sets of models and methods for approaching it. Out of these different frameworks has emerged a core set of commonalities that over the past few decades has come to be recognized as a generic framework for studying complex systems in the abstract. Complexity theory encompasses a very broad and very diverse set of models and methods. As yet, there is no proper formulation to structure and give definition to this framework. Thus, we will present it as a composite of our four main areas that encompass the different major perspectives on complex systems and how to best interpret them, including self-organization theory, nonlinear systems, network theory, and adaptive systems theory. Firstly, self-organization and emergence. Complex systems are composed of many small parts without centralized control, examples being flocks of birds, financial markets, social networks, global logistics networks, or the human brain. Without centralized control, global organization is an emergent feature of the local interactions between the parts. Whereas the term emergence is a general concept referring to how new levels of organization are formed as we put component parts together, the theory of self-organization presents a number of concrete models for understanding how this process takes place. The model of self-organization draws upon information theory to understand organization in terms of information and entropy. It draws upon ideas in physics surrounding synchronization and pattern formation, and ideas in chemistry surrounding dissipative systems and far-from-equilibrium processes. Here we are looking at how elements governed by simple rules synchronize their behavior, with the result being a process of self-organization as patterns of organization emerge from the bottom up. Researchers try to model complex systems by capturing these local rules and using computational tools like agent-based modeling to try and simulate the process through which order emerges out of initially homogeneous or disordered states. Next, nonlinear systems and chaos theory. Nonlinearity is an inherent feature and major theme that crosses all areas of complex systems. A lot of nonlinear systems theory has its origins in quite dense and obscure mathematics and physics. Out of the study of certain types of equations, weather patterns, fluid dynamics, and particular chemical reactions has emerged some very counterintuitive phenomena in the form of the butterfly effect and chaos. Chaos theory, which is the study of nonlinear dynamical systems, was one of the first major challenges to the Newtonian paradigm that was accepted into the mainstream body of scientific knowledge. Our modern scientific framework is based upon linear systems theory, and this places significant constraints upon it. Linear systems theory is dependent upon the concept of a system having an equilibrium. Although linear systems theory often works as an approximation, the fact is that many of the phenomena we are interested in describing are nonlinear. Processes of change, such as regime shifts within ecosystems and society, happen far from equilibrium. They are governed by the dynamics of feedback loops and not linear equations. Trying to model complex systems by using traditional linear systems theory is like trying to put a screw into a piece of wood with a hammer. We are simply using the wrong tool because it is the only one we have. Thus, the areas of nonlinear systems and their dynamics is another major part of the framework of complexity theory that has come largely from physics, mathematics, and the study of far-from-equilibrium processes in chemistry. Next, network theory. Network theory is another major area to complexity theory, as almost all complex systems can be understood and modeled effectively as networks. Network theory is a formal mathematical language, but it has proven a very practical tool for analysis and thus has found widespread application in many areas. The study of networks is probably the youngest and most active area of complexity science, again driven by the rise of computation and the fundamental role that networks are starting to play in our world with the advent of information technology. With the theory of networks and the availability of new sources of data, we are starting to get a real picture to what some of these complex systems that make up our world actually look like. We can start to see the connections within financial systems through which contagion spreads, the real-time movement of freight around the globe, or socio-political networks that influence our lives. This is a new kind of science, driven less by models and equations, but more by real-time, dense data sets. This means we are no longer left staring at models, but now have accessible visualizations to give us a much more rich, intuitive, and in many ways, real sense for what exactly these complex systems are like. The main contributions to this area have come from the area of mathematics called graph theory, and again, computer science. The last major area to complexity theory that we will discuss is that of complex adaptive systems. Complex adaptive systems are classical examples of complex systems, and people often use the two words somewhat interchangeably. They consist of many parts acting and reacting to each other's behavior, like a school of fish swimming together, nation-states within the international political environment, or businesses in a market. They are highly dynamic and develop through an evolutionary-like process. The central issue is that of the process of adaptation and evolution. The idea of adaptation formed a central part of cybernetics that contributed ideas surrounding control systems and how systems regulate themselves and their environment in order to maintain homeostasis. A key issue here is that of the dynamics surrounding cooperation and competition that form as adaptive agents interact and try to pursue their goals collectively. One could also include game theory here, a branch of mathematics for modeling the interaction between adaptive agents of all kinds and the dynamics of cooperation and competition that form out of this. When the idea of adaptation is generalized to a whole population of agents and takes place over a series of life cycles, it can be termed evolution. And the theory of evolution is one of the major contributions that ecology has made to complexity theory. We now have a number of different models for understanding evolution, including evolutionary game theory, replicator equations, fitness landscapes, and genetic algorithms, among others. This is an area that has grown out of cybernetics, computer science, economics, and ecology. Lastly, we'll discuss a little of the context and significance of the area of complexity theory as it plays a somewhat unique role within the framework of contemporary science. The website Scholarpedia describes complexity theory as an emerging post-Newtonian paradigm. There is a lot packed into this short statement, so let's try and unravel and make sense of it. The Newtonian framework is based on linear systems theory. This has been a powerful tool for helping us understand the world. Through the contributions of millions of researchers over the course of centuries, we have built up a large and sophisticated body of scientific knowledge, which is one of humanity's greatest achievements. Throughout the 20th century, though, the Newtonian paradigm and linear systems theory have become increasingly called into question as general relativity and then chaos theory proved some of its most basic assumptions to be, in fact, flawed. The fact is that much of the phenomena that we are really interested in are inherently nonlinear, such as almost all socio-political, ecological, and economic phenomena. A core challenge of 21st century science, then, is to extend this framework into the world of nonlinear systems and complexity, and this means going beyond the Newtonian framework. As Scholarpedia puts it, developing a post-Newtonian paradigm, and this is exactly what complexity theory is doing. To summarize, we have been giving a quick overview to the area of complexity theory, which we defined as a set of theoretical frameworks used for modeling complex systems within a variety of domains. We looked at four of the major modeling frameworks that fall under its canopy. We firstly talked about self-organization and how it gives us the tools to understand the process of emergence where global patterns form out of only local interactions. We talked about the theory of nonlinear systems and how it has emerged out of the study of chaotic physical and chemical processes. We then discussed network theory as another major domain that understands complex systems in terms of connectivity and how things flow through these systems. The last major area we looked at was the theory of adaptive systems that tries to understand complex adaptive systems in terms of the interaction between adaptive agents, cooperation and competition, and the dynamics of evolution. Finally, we tried to provide some insight into the significance and context of complexity theory as a so-called post-Newtonian paradigm as it tries to extend our scientific body of knowledge into the world of nonlinear systems.
And we will close this session with a brief discussion of systems theory overview. And this is just for review. This is also particularly good. Same source.
Systems theory is a set of theoretical concepts used to describe a wide variety of things in terms of a model called a system. To give it context, let's talk a bit about its origins. Of course, people have been coming up with abstract theories about how the world works for a long time. Some ancient Greeks thought that everything was made of earth, water, fire, and air, whilst others came to the conclusion that it was the expression of perfect geometric forms. Over the years, our theoretical systems have grown into large and sophisticated bodies of knowledge such as philosophy, mathematics, and many other areas of theoretical science, although these theoretical frameworks are often limited to relatively specific areas of interest. During the 20th century, systems theory emerged as a new theory that draws upon many core concepts within these pre-existing methods to develop a more abstract framework that is designed to be universally applicable to all domains. In order to achieve such general relevance, systems theory starts with the abstract concept of a system and then applies this to modeling various different phenomena from biological to social and technical systems. The model of a system can be loosely defined as a set of parts, often called elements, that form a whole which is referred to as the system. A system exists within an environment and has a boundary that differentiates the system's exterior from its interior. An example of this might be a country, interior to which are all the people, institutions, and other elements that constitute the nation as an entire system, whilst the exterior to its boundary is the international political environment. A system can be either open or isolated. Isolated systems do not interact with their environment, but most systems are open, meaning that there is an exchange of energy and resources between the system and its environment. The passing of energy or resources from the exterior of the system's boundary to the interior is termed an input, whilst the reverse is termed an output. Systems develop or function through the input of energy or resources from their environment. They process this energy by transforming it to create an output. If this output is of some value to its environment, it can be termed energy. If, on the other hand, it is of negative value, it may be termed entropy, a scientific term for lack of order, disarrangement, or in more familiar terms, we might call it waste. An early use of this type of model was during the development of the steam engine, where scientists and engineers were thinking about the amount of fuel inputted to the engine relative to the power output and heat energy wasted. By using this model, they could create a quantifiable ratio between them that we would now term the efficiency of the system. Of course, this same reasoning can be applied to a wide variety of phenomena, from the processing of energy within a plant cell to the efficiency of a business organization. We can also model systems on various scales, thus elements can form part of systems that themselves form part of larger systems and so on. This is termed nesting or encapsulation and helps us to analyze a system on various levels whilst hiding away the underlying complexity. Systems theory explores many other areas such as emergence that raises key questions about the relationship between the parts within a system and the whole. That is, how elements can function together or self-organize to create some new and emergent structure as an entirety. Or other areas such as cybernetics, that deals with a system's control mechanisms that allow it to adapt and respond to changes within its environment through positive and negative feedback loops. Systems theory has found application within a wide variety of areas, forming the foundation for many new subjects such as systems psychology, systems engineering, and systems ecology, to name but a few, all of which place an emphasis upon a more holistic and contextualized approach to understanding the world around us.
Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.